This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The character Josh is straight, at least he thinks he is, when the first episode of Please Like Me begins. But before that episode concludes, he's kissed a boy and realized he's gay. Please Like Me is a semi-autobiographical sitcom created by and starring my guest Josh Thomas, a 27-year-old Australian comic and popular TV personality. Please Like Me was created for Australian TV, but was picked up here last year by the new cable channel Pivot, which is geared to millennials. Pivot is currently showing season 2. Reviewing the show in Entertainment Weekly, Melissa Meritz wrote, "Too few shows are able to capture the real voice of 20-somethings, so Please Like Me's take on post-collegiate life feels particularly spot on." In Time magazine, James Poniewozik included it on his 2013 10 Best list. The two Joshes, Josh Thomas and the character he plays, have several things in common besides their sexual orientation. Their parents are divorced, they're close with their mothers, and their mothers have attempted suicide. Let's start with the opening of the first episode. Josh is with his girlfriend in a restaurant where they've just been served an enormous, colorful ice cream sundae.
Isn't it just mind-blowing to think we actually get to eat this?
Josh, I want to talk to you about something.
Oh, no. No. No, you don't.
I think we should break up.
Oh. Oh, that's bad.
I kind of feel like we've drifted, you know?
This isn't good at all.
Also, you're gay.
What? No, I'm not.
Josh, you're probably gay.
I'm not.
I mean, we could still be friends, if you like. It wouldn't be really that different, would it?
Is $19 sundae suddenly pretty f***ing humiliating?
That's a scene from Please Like Me, written and starring my guest, Josh Thomas. Josh Thomas, welcome to Fresh Air. So do you think one of your girlfriends figured out before you did that you were gay?
No, they didn't. That's not autobiographical. I mean, the poor girls, I don't know what they're thinking now, because I haven't spoken to any of them, the girlfriends that I had when I was teenagers. I was never confronted like that by a girl.
So why did you want to start the series with that scene?
I just thought it was a funny idea. I thought it was a funny idea, a girl telling me that I was gay over a sundae, just a delicious sundae, just me thinking I'm going to have the best day ever and her just confronting me with this news. I think maybe it happened to a friend or something. Someone told me a story and happened to them.
So I read that when you pitched Please Like Me, when you pitched the series, that you still were working under the assumption that you were straight. So
I was working under the assumption, yeah. For a lot of my life, I was working under the assumption I was straight. And then I met a boy and I fell in love with him. And then we had to change the pitch during development. Because we're in development in Australia since I was 20, for like 4 or 5 years. Because it's a government TV station, so things are really slow. It's like making a TV show with the post office, you know. So it took a long time. And I was straight, and the show was about Josh, like, having trouble dating girls. And then one day I had to, like, sit the producer and the network down and tell them there was some script changes.
Give me a sense of what that conversation was like. Well, from now on, the character Josh, you know, is going to be gay.
Well, I didn't. And actually, look, it was pretty bad. I didn't tell a lot of people because I just didn't, like the character on the show, I just didn't want to make a big deal out of it. And I just didn't think it was a thing I had to do, right? So I text messaged my dad. Okay. My mom called me and she said, "Josh, what's this I hear about you having a boyfriend?" I said, "I can't chat him on the train." And she said, "I'm okay." And that was the end of like the conversations I had about it. Like I sort of told my friends and they didn't care. And then my manager was doing all like the professional calls, like calling the TV show I worked for and the development and the producer of Please Like Me. But he forgot to call the producer. And no one told him. And then everyone had been telling him I was gay. And he was like, "It's just rumors. You guys got to stop making this up, right? Like, this is like, you know, I know him. He's not gay." And then it turns out that it just no one told him.
Well, that's hysterical. The producer didn't know. But you had to change the whole premise.
Yeah, so we're like sitting down with him. And he was like, "What is this I hear about you being gay?" And I was like, "Well, no one told you." And then I was, like, being all blasé about it. And he was like, "No, this is, like, a big deal. Like, we've got, like, development money to make this show. And we have to, like, change the scripts. We have to, like, talk to them. It's, like, a big deal." And I just sort of laughed it off.
But you were able to make the changes.
We made the changes, yeah. But we weren't sure as well, like, how people... Because we were like, you know, does a character need to be gay? It's not me. You know, these are the scripts we've got. Why does it need to change? But I think now...
Well, that's a good question. Why did it need to change?
I just think people would feel awkward watching me pretend to like girls. Plus, why not make him gay? I mean, it just would have been offensive to have this show that's autobiographical and for me to be straight. I mean, that's just a weird choice to make.
So, what was it like to not only make this big change in your life, but have it immediately be represented on screen in your portrayal of a semi-autobiographical character?
Well, I mean, at the time we were just in development, so like for Please Like Me, it wasn't a big deal, but I was doing stand-up, you know, and I like built all this material, which was all true stories about bad dates I had with girls and like terrible things that happened while I was trying to have sex with girls, and I had to lose all my stand-up, which for a stand-up is just heartbreaking, to lose all your jokes.
Well, you could still have talked about terrible things that happened to you when you had sex with girls.
Yeah, but it was such like an awkward end. It was like, yeah, I'm gay now, and then trying to segue back to when I wasn't gay just to do this like old material. Like, it was so awkward. I just had to like, I had to bin it and start again, which is like, that was the most traumatic part for me.
But it's kind of a goldmine in a way. It like opens the door to all this new material.
There's all this new stuff I could talk about. But then, because I like came out publicly and privately at the same time, so it was something that I never really... had a conversation about. Like, I told my friends and my parents, and we didn't really care that much. But then suddenly I was doing interviews, and people were like asking me questions, and it was like, oh, I've never actually spoken about this. So the first time I was doing it was like in a radio interview like this, or and then on stage. It was like a pretty weird situation.
So it sounds like there was no conversation with your parents. You slipped in there that you texted your father.
I texted my father, okay. And then...
Was that a clever way of avoiding any eye contact or the chance of any follow-up question or the possibility of meaningful conversation?
Oh, it's so grim. So he was coming to, like, visit me. Right, in where I lived in Melbourne, and I was living with my boyfriend. I'd been dating him for like 6 months, and he moved in way too quick. And I had to tell my dad because like my boyfriend lived in my house. You know, there's only one bedroom, so I texted him. I said, "Hey, what time is your flight getting tomorrow? Also, I have a boyfriend. See ya." And then he got like quite upset about texting him because it was like news that shouldn't be texted. And then I was sort of like, I just don't think this is something I need to be obliged to talk about, to be honest. And then he just spoke to me about AIDS for like a really long time, and it's sort of in the show where he like says like homosexuals are 30 times more likely to get, he said AIDS but he meant HIV, but that's fine. And I was just like, I just don't think this is like a true fact. And also I'm across it, like I'm across condoms, like it's not like, it's actually not much different, you know, now that I'm gay, still got to wear a condom. I mean, babies are terrifying. You know, like, I know about this. That's all he wanted to talk about was HIV. And then my brother's gay as well, right? And he's older than me, and he's already come out. So that's why I think for them it was a bit boring. Like, they're a bit like, you know, you got to step it up, like, come back with bigger news, like, when you're a meth addict or something. And, My brother told her, and she started crying, but she cries a lot. And then she called me, and we just had that conversation, and then we never spoke about it again.
In the series, like, you're playing somebody named Josh who's slightly based on your life, and he really avoids emotional, meaningful conversations, like you apparently do too. But you're very perceptive as a writer about the subtext of people's conversations, about what's driving people emotionally. So it's not like you're not noticing emotions or incapable of either experiencing or reading them, but you just don't want to participate in discussion of them.
No, but I talk about my feelings all the time. It's just never in like a sad way. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? We just don't like, me and my friends just don't get together and indulge in like, you know, panic about what we're doing with our lives or sadness. But I mean, nothing has happened in the last, like, my best friend in the show, Tom, I've known her since I was 12, And I mean, I've never had a feeling or have a moment in my life happen since we were 12 that he doesn't know about. Like, we talk about everything, but just not in like a really dramatic way. I don't know. I just think people are so keen to be sad these days. They really love it, you know? A lot of people just want to tell everyone how hard everything is, and they're probably fine.
So let's hear a scene from Please Like Me with your best friend in real life who plays your best friend in the series. And this is a scene you've just had your first kiss with a boy. And so this is the morning after, and you're going to the hospital because you just got a voicemail from your father saying that your mother, who's bipolar, just tried to kill herself with a lot of pills and with a lot of Bailey's, which is a kind of whiskey cream liqueur.
It's a big day. It's a big day. That's a big day for anybody.
So you're on your way to the hospital with your friend Tom, and here's the conversation.
You've never left this much time between something happening and you telling me.
My mum took quite a bit of Panadol and drunk half a bottle of Bailey's.
Bailey's?
Yeah.
How do you even drink half a bottle of Bailey's?
I just don't know. Guess what else?
You made out with Jeffrey.
I can never really trust with someone that good-looking as into me. Do you know what I mean? I just don't get it. Like, it's that mediocre-looking, I can sort of appreciate why their standards are so low. When they're that pretty, I'm just like, oh, what are you hiding? You know?
Claire is quite good-looking.
I really don't think she was that good-looking when we got together. Puberty did well with her.
Just so I know, we're not talking about your mum because you're all, like, emotionally stunted, yeah?
Yeah.
And we're just ignoring the fact that Jeffrey's a man?
Yes.
Are you sure you don't have feelings you want to share with me in some kind of talk?
Yeah.
It can be good to share your feelings.
Nope. No. Nah.
Okay, that's a scene from the opening episode of Please Like Me, which stars my guest Josh Thomas, who also writes the series. So the line is really funny when you say you never trust it when somebody really good-looking is into you. Do you feel that way in real life?
Yeah, of course.
Why, of course?
Well, because, like, if someone's mediocre-looking, it's just what I explained. I know why they're, like, trying to kiss me. I know where their flaws are, but if they're really pretty, then I know their flaws must be, like, personality-based, and you haven't discovered them yet, you know?
Do you think you are any more or less attractive as a straight man or a gay man? Do you know what I mean? Like, let me put it this way. The way you look, do you think you're physically more of a catch
I'm not physically
for girls or boys?
Uh-huh. No. But I'm like, in Australia, I'm like properly on television all the time. So, like, I get to kiss people that are out of my league. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
On TV, you get to date out of your league.
But that gives you a pass in real life, too. That kind of gives you an upgrade in real life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But then, yeah. I mean, the only time I've been on a date with someone who was, like, really pretty and who was into me, and this is kind of what, like, that Jeffrey character is based on, I've always really wanted to, like, make it work. Because, like, that's a good, I want, like, a super hot boyfriend. But the conversation's always been just so grim. It's always been quite tense for me because I'm desperate for them to be interesting. I try really hard to make it work, and then it never does.
So really, the headline of the clip that we just played is that your mother in the series tries to take her life, and you know she's bipolar, and she tried to kill herself with pills and liquor, and fortunately, you know, she gets to the hospital in time and is saved. And I think that this is based in part on your own mother.
Yeah, that's like one of the truest storylines in the season is that kind of day, that voicemail. Like I woke up and I like slept in until like 1 p.m. and then turned my phone on and like it went backwards through the day, starting at 1 p.m. where they told me she was fine, and it went backwards to 9 a.m. and ended with her calling me just after she had like taken the pills. It's pretty intense voicemail. And then I went to the hospital, and there's a scene in the show I'm in like visiting her in hospital, I think it's pretty much verbatim, that's about as honest as we get, those two scenes.
Let's get back to my interview with Australian comic Josh Thomas. His semi-autobiographical sitcom, Please Like Me, is shown in the U.S. on the new cable channel Pivot TV. Here's a pretty autobiographical scene from the first episode. Josh's parents are divorced. His mother is in the hospital after attempting suicide. Josh is at the hospital, where he's spoken with one of the doctors, who's explained Josh's mother can't be left alone in her condition. Tuition, or she can return home, but she can't live alone. Someone has to be with her. In this scene, Josh breaks the news to his mother, who's played by Deborah Lawrence.
So, what have you guys decided to do with me?
We haven't decided that the doctor thinks we should put you in a mental home.
What, you think... Am I mental?
I don't know.
So what are the other options?
Well, someone needs to live with you. So that could be me, I guess, or Auntie Peg.
No. Don't make me move back in with her. I couldn't bear it.
Okay.
And you shouldn't have to live with me either, Josh. I shouldn't be your problem.
Well, I mean, I haven't decided. I'm not sure I could move out on Tom.
No, but you see, you could do all the same sorts of things at my place as you do at Tom's. It's okay, I'm cool with that.
You don't have to... I haven't decided. I'll think about it.
But you see, you could bring Claire home to sleep over if you
want.
What? I'm cool, okay? Like, you can have sex at the house if you want.
Oh, f***,
man. No, please don't swear, Josh.
Also, Claire and I broke up.
What? Who broke up with who?
She broke up with me.
Oh, well, look, even if you want casual girls...
I'm not having sex in the house.
Well, I'm just saying you can if you want.
Well, I don't want to. Especially I don't want to with your permission.
No, I am just saying, okay?
Well, don't.
Okay. I won't.
How does your mother feel about being depicted in what's basically a comedy series?
Yeah, she was really... I mean, she loves it now. Like, she has ebbs and flows. I mean, at first, because I was like... Obviously, she has permission, right? So she has to give permission. She has to, like... She gets script approval, okay? Because you can't... Because I've got characters based on her. We can't defame her. So she has to, like... She gets higher script approval than the networks do. Her and my dad. And when I first, like, pitched it to her, like, 7 years ago, I was like, you know, I want to do the show, and I want the mum to attempt suicide because it's something that I know about, that I feel I can write about, and it's something that I haven't seen depicted on television, like, very honestly. And I knew that, like, when it happened to her, there was a lot of... She, like, felt, like, a lot of shame, and I was like, I don't think, like, that's what we need. I don't think it needs to be like that. And I think if I could write a TV show where, like, I completely understand the situation, it's something I've lived through, like, I'm sort of I'm almost an expert on it, and I think it would be good. And she was like, she liked that, but she never understood how it could be a comedy. Which, I mean, nobody did. I mean, it was the first question of every pitch meeting or with everybody. It was like, why do you think this can be funny? And then when she first watched it, I think she was still a bit confused. I think that's probably quite an intense experience for her to watch the show for the first time, especially because the show is just not like, it's not the type of television that she watches. And then she kind of like spoke to friends about it, and her friends saw it, and her friends all thought it was like really lovely about her and a really nice, I mean, she had like a few psychiatrists tell her that they thought it was a really good depiction of mental health, that like we had done what I told her I wanted to do. So now she like just thinks it's really lovely. She thinks it's just a really nice show about her, because it is like the show is really lovely to her. I don't think anybody would watch it and get to the end and think the mum is like a bad person or anything like that.
No, and your character so clearly loves his mother and vice versa.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's really nice to her. I think when you're watching a show that nobody else has seen, because she's seen it before anyone else and you've got no idea what people are going to think about it. And like, as well as like thinking about how she's depicted, she's thinking like, is my son going to be employed next year after making this TV? Like, is this any good? Do you know what I mean? I think that was probably like pretty intense, but she's like, came out the other side once it went to air, and she really thinks it's lovely now.
Why did you think you could make it funny that your mother had tried to commit suicide and has to deal with bipolar?
Honestly, I didn't think it was funny. I was like, it's not necessarily a comedy. Like, there's going to be scenes they're going to be sad. Like, I wanted to make a show that was sort of depicting life. And I've never understood this, like, comedy, drama, segregation. I've never, like, had a day or an experience that wasn't either completely hilarious or completely funny. I've had lots of, like, funny things happen that were humiliating, but were still very funny. And I've had a lot of sad things happen that have, like, moments of, like, joy and comedy in them. So I just wanted to, like, make sure we were doing that with every storyline. So the sad storylines have these sort of moments of joy and the you know, vice versa.
Did your mother try to kill herself more than once?
Oh, yeah. She did a few times. And we talk about it in series two. We don't ever show it again because we've done it, you know.
So how old were you the first time when your mother tried to take her life?
Oh, gosh. I don't even know. I think it would have been like 18.
Did you take it personally that, you know, that she wouldn't go on living for your sake? Let me rephrase
such
that.
Such an interesting question.
Yeah.
I understand. Yeah. You don't need to rephrase it. I completely understand. And it's like such an important question. It's kind of interesting doing this show because this season two, we've got a lot of other characters with mental illness and we're really exploring suicide much more in depth. And I never felt like it was about me. There's a scene in season two where, like, I say that. Like, I just didn't think it was about me, right? I was, like, always viewed it as, like, an illness and she wasn't in, like, you know, I was like, she's crazy. Like, she's making a crazy decision because she's got a mental disorder. Like, that's something that, like, I always thought was pretty clear, but other people involved didn't feel that way. Like, a lot of our family members were really angry at her for, like, what they were like, why would you do this to me? And I had this interesting, did this interview with this lady who was bipolar, and she was talking about when she gets depressed and committing suicides, and I mentioned, like, people getting angry about it, and she was like, well, for her, when she was in, like, such a dark place, like, in such a low place in that depression, she, like, hated herself so much that she actually thought she was doing everyone a favor. Like, she didn't think she was doing it to everybody. Like from our point of view, we think, like, why are you putting, you know, taking a risk that means that I'm going to lose you, but they're thinking, like, I'm going to do this as a favor so you don't have to deal with the burden of me, which I thought was, like, a really interesting thing. I don't know if that's what happened with my mom. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But that's what, you know, we put that in the show because I thought that was really an interesting angle. And you don't really know, like, why people are attempting suicide. I think taking it personally is, like, it's, like, a weird choice to make. It's easier not to take it personally, so I just don't.
You started your stand-up comedy career when you were 17, which is pretty young to be performing. How did you get your start that early?
I did, like, a stand-up comedy, amateur comedy competition, and I won it. Because I just wasn't, like, thinking things through, do you know what I mean? Because I was 17. Like, lots of people make stupid choices when they're 17. Sometimes it involves, like, unprotected sex. But for me, I just, like, started doing stand-up because I didn't think it through. And it worked out fine for me.
What was your comedy like when you were 17?
Lots of jokes about how everyone thinks I'm gay, but I'm not gay.
Oh, seriously?
yeah, that's my
hysterical.
First big routine.
Oh, tell us one or two of those jokes.
God, I can't remember them. And I don't want to remember them, to be honest. Well, this is also interesting. I had this stand-up routine about my mum taking me to the shops and, like, losing her mind and buying me condoms and being really loud and, like, laughing and just being absurd. And at the time, she wasn't diagnosed as bipolar. I just had this story about my mum being embarrassing. And then it turns out she was bipolar. And then the rest of the story was about me not being gay. So, pretty interesting stand-up routine looking back.
Makes you sound so clueless.
So clueless. I am pretty clueless. Plus, I was 17. I mean, of course, I had no idea.
So, looking back on your life, why do you think people assumed that you were gay and you assumed that you weren't?
I didn't know. It was one of my jokes when I came out was how I didn't understand how I didn't know when everyone ever drove past me in a pickup truck did. I just wasn't paying that much attention. Plus, like, I was having sex with girls when I was a teenager and it was fun. Because, like, it's fun when you're a teenager to just put it anywhere. Like, that's a fun time, that's a fun afternoon, you know, like, it's but then, like, I grew up and then I came to terms with the fact that maybe it wasn't for me. Also, one of the big driving factors of me sort of coming to terms with it and coming out was I, like, fell in love with a boy, because, like, everyone always talks about like sex when they're talking about homosexuality. But the thing is, if you can't be sexually attracted to someone, you're not going to fall in love with them. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're straight, you're not going to be able to feel romantic feelings for your best friend of the same gender, even though they're possibly very attractive and incredible to hang out with. Like, it's just not going to happen. So when I like fell in love with a boy, I was like, oh, all these other relationships I had, that was just me having sex with a friend. But this is like different, and that forced me to like come to terms with it.
So your stand-up comedy led to opportunities on television, including a show called Talking About Your Generation. And Americans don't know the show, so I'm going to ask you to explain it.
It's like a game show. It's, I guess, you guys have what's called Hollywood Tonight or...
Hollywood Game Night. I've seen ads.
Hollywood
for it.
Game
I
Night?
I haven't seen the show. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, like, I think the closest thing you have where they play, like, parlor games, and it's, like, kind of some of the same people every week. We do a lot of that television in Australia. So it was, like, this game show where Generation Y, which you call millennials, Generation X, and baby boomers, like, battled it out. And I was on there every week, and we played, like, wacky games. It was very wacky. It was the number one rating show in Australia for a while. Which doesn't say a lot about our country.
So there's an episode where you're on a team with your grandmother, and and one of you has to answer the trivia question, the pop culture trivia questions, and the other one is going to get strapped into a chair with their arms in restraints and three buckets over their heads. And for every wrong answer, a bucket is going to get dumped on the head. There's a bucket of sour cream, guacamole, and hot sauce. And so you end up, at your grandmother's suggestion, she gets into the chair. You end up answering the questions. And you get, I think, just one of them wrong, and she gets the sour cream dumped on her head.
Mm.
And you look kind of upset, but not so upset that you seriously say, this must stop. In good conscience, I cannot allow this to happen. Did you know that she was going to volunteer to do this? Was this worked out in advance?
We have had producers walk onto that set twice. We made the show for 4 years and stopped the show mid-recording, and that was one where she was like, I'll get in. Because, like, she's not meant to get in. Like, they didn't want her to get in. They wanted me to get in. Nobody wanted her to get in. I didn't want her to get in. But she really wanted to go in the big torture device. And she's 82, right? And the host of the show, Sean, he's, like, a really decent guy. And he was like, we're not going to tell her she's not allowed to do it. Like, she's an adult. You know what I mean? You can't not let her make choices. You can't say, like, oh, what if you were, like, if she was 75, would we let her? Like if she wants to go in the machine, we have to let her do it. I mean, nobody wanted to. I would much prefer to have sour cream poured on my head than be on television watching my grandma have sour cream poured on her head. You know, she just had the time of her life. She just loved it. The sour cream gets poured on her head, and she has nachos, and she, like, starts eating the sour cream off her dress. I mean, that's funny. She killed
it. Right. Well, does your grandmother have any kind of background in show business?
No. She's just, I mean, I've never seen her have that much fun. She was like, oh, no one's ever done my makeup. And they, like, flew her down business class, and, like, the audience just loved her. And she just had, like, the funnest day. And I think you can tell when you watch the show. But I had a few people get, like, angry at me in supermarkets for doing it. Not that I did it. I just stood by.
And what was the conversation like afterwards? She was happy about it?
Oh, she was so happy. Like, I just think it's one of the best days she's had in the last couple of years. Really went on, like, an adventure, you know? I mean, sometimes I talk to her and say, like, how's it going, Grandma? And she says, oh, just waiting to die. like, it's grim. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not... Like,
does she mean to be funny when she says that?
No. No,
I'm sorry I laughed then. Okay.
No, it's fine. She's really religious, so she's, like... She's actually excited about it. She's really looking forward to seeing my granddad again.
Is she sorry that you're not religious?
No. I mean, she completely understands. And she, you know, in season one, there's that scene where Aunt Peg, who's kind of pseudo-grandma, called Aunt Peg and not grandma because I didn't want to make my grandma sign a release form. But she stands up in church and does that, like, rant at the priest, at him for being homophobic. There's, like, a scene where she does that. And that was, like, my grandma did that. That's, like, almost verbatim what my grandma did.
What did your grandmother say to the priest?
She told me, she said, I was sitting in church the other day, and he was telling everyone that gay people are going to go to hell and that gay people are bad. And I stood up and I said, I have three gay
grandsons. And then she said, actually, Josh, at the time you hadn't come out, I had two, but I've changed it. I have three gay grandsons, and they're good people, and they don't have a choice, and, you know, they don't get to pick the color of their eyes, and they don't get to pick their sexuality, and we should love them all the same. Jesus said something, and we should love them all the same. And then she, like, sat back down, just this tiny 80-something-year-old woman standing up against the church. I think it sounds pretty incredible to me. I wasn't there. I didn't get to see it.
So what's next for you? You have a second season that's on now.
And then we're doing season three. Uh-huh. Americans are always asking me what's next. They always want to know what's next. I have a job, okay?
But who knows how long?
I have my own TV show. Everyone can just relax. I'm doing enough. They want to know, like, what else I'm doing. Calm down, America. I have my own TV show. I'm 27. I have my own TV show. I'm doing all right. We're doing season three. Season three's been commissioned. So we're doing that. I'm writing season three at the moment. And that's everything. That's all my time.
Okay. Whew, what a relief. I'm so worried about you. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I don't need to. I'm employed for at least another year. And then I'll worry about what's next.
All right.
So ambitious. This country's so ambitious.
Well, Josh Thomas, it's really been great talking with you. Thank you so much. Good luck with the series.
Thanks so much.
Josh Thomas is the creator and star of the Australian sitcom Please Like Me, which is shown in the U.S. on the new cable channel Pivot TV. Coming up, Milo Miles reviews a new album by the indie band Tennis. This is Fresh Air.